Senate Committee on Revenue. Agenda today is a public hearing, possible work session on Bill 2090 and Senate Bill 1264.
That's the way then.
We will, excellent. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2090. Liz Bennett. Well, tell us about this.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, House Bill 2090 is extending the sunset deadline for property tax exemption for property owners who construct or purchase low-income housing units. And currently in the law, it's January 1st of 2000. We're extending the 10 years to January 1st of 2010. And under current law, housing units occupied by low-income residents are exempt from property taxes for both land and improvement. And then the tax savings from the property tax exemption has to be passed on in lower rents for the residents. This exemption is allowed for 20 years, and the eligible property is only exempt from the taxes of the county or the city which adopts the ordinance. So local governments do have control over whether or not they want to implement these ordinances. This program was enacted about 1989. Now in 1999, there's about over 30 different properties that claim this property tax exemption. And you can be either profit or nonprofit. And as far as extending this 10 years, all I did was, as far as the revenue impact, is look at how many additional properties would be claiming each year from 1999 on. And so I estimated that approximately 3 new properties would claim this exemption each year. And in the next 2 bienniums, this would allow 9 new property owners of low-income housing units by the 3rd year. So this corresponds to approximately 37,000 in the first biennium and 189,000 in the second biennium for just those new properties that could claim the exemption between the years 2000 and 2003. It's, you know, obviously, since this does go on for 20 years, it does have a revenue impact that goes much beyond these 2 biennium.
All right. Thank you. We have several folks signed up. Lynn Koshler. Richie Weinman. Who's with St. Vincent de Paul? Well, it's not so bad. What is it?
M. Williams.
No way. Welcome. Oh, there we go.
I know her. She really is M.
Really? Don't have to swear or anything. Okay. Thank you and welcome, and we'd be delighted to have your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lynn Chesler. I'm with the Housing and Community Services Department. The committee staff has really summarized this bill quite accurately. I would just reemphasize that since a multiple option property tax exemption, it is available to both for-profit and non-profit. A local governing jurisdiction adopts the policy in general, and each individual property then is also additionally reviewed to be in compliance with that general adoption of the provision. So you're going to see the county or the city examine it as a general policy first, and then every property that's brought forward is examined again to make sure that it indeed follows their general policy. It is restricted to units that benefit households at less than 60% of median income. As we cited, it's a 20-year exemption. And I would add to it that if you have the typical $80,000 apartment unit with the $15 per thousand tax bill on it, this particular exemption results in a benefit of $100 per month rent reduction to that tenant, and that's significant. We have proposed this bill at the request of a lot of local jurisdictions who will support this, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to respond to them.
Thank you. I think we'll hear the other testimony, and then we may have questions.
I'm Richie Weinman. I'm with the City of Eugene, and I won't repeat what I just passed out, but what I'll say is that we have a huge low-income housing problem in our community. On any given night, we have over 1,400 homeless people. Looking Glass, an agency that works with youth in our community, identified over 2,000 separate teenagers last year that were homeless, which is a significant number. that gives you some sense of the magnitude of our issue. The biggest problem we have is families with children, and I think there's nothing much sadder than a child going to school that doesn't have a place to live. And so we are trying as a community really hard to figure out ways of creating more low-income housing and creating some incentives to have it done. So the city of Eugene is doing its part by, for instance, exempting low-income housing from permit fees and system development charges and actually putting general funds into low-income housing. One of the tools that we use is a property tax exemption, and it's a tool that we'd like to have from the state. And the Housing Authority is one of our developers, and they get an automatic exemption under other ORRF rules. But other developers, such as St. Vincent de Paul, in order to compete fairly with them for our housing assistance, really need the same playing field, the same level playing field. We really encourage you to keep this tax exemption in place and give the City Council a chance to approve exemptions on a case-by-case basis if you wish to.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Ann Williams from St. Vincent de Paul, and I'd like to thank the committee for allowing us to testify. I want to talk a little bit about two things that haven't really been emphasized by the other proponents of this particular bill. This bill offers a rural community a real chance to do two things: to participate in making housing affordable for constituents in their communities, and to institute local standards. This measure, ORS 307, permits local jurisdictions first to adopt the notion of providing property tax exemption for low-income housing in their communities. Once that statute is adopted, a project must then go before City Council and the Planning Department and the citizens of the community. It's at that moment that the jurisdiction has the option of defining what is good and what is high-quality affordable housing in that jurisdiction, and then awarding the property tax exemption based on those defined local standards. In rural communities, there are very few tools that are available. In the city of Eugene, when we do a development, we are very fortunate in having a committed city that waives fees and permits, assists with systems development charges, and in some cases actually purchases sites for us. In rural communities, we cannot make that kind of claim on a meager tax base in a rural community. What we can do is work with that community to ensure that the affordable housing that's going to benefit residents meets local standards, and then at that point, we can negotiate with the jurisdiction so that no net loss of revenue occurs, but so that additional property tax base on the improvements are forgiven so that we can ensure rent levels are maintained. This is the strategy that we're working on in this community of Satan, will be the strategy we'll work on in Florence, and will also be the strategy we work on in Cottage Grove. So I would really encourage preserving the rights and the capacity of local jurisdictions to use this tax exemption opportunity to establish local standards. The second point I want to very briefly touch on is the fact that we really do not have the necessary kinds of subsidies for rural projects to ensure the rent levels can be as low as possible. Having this statute in place allows the local jurisdiction to bring us the last piece of subsidy, which is directly passed on to tenants in the form of lower rents. I'd be happy to entertain questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there questions? I have one, and it has to do with the date, 2010. Do you expect that the problem of low-income housing will be solved by that time?
Not a chance. In fact,
I'm wondering.
I have my brothers. There wouldn't be a sunset date on this.
Right. That's my question. Was that discussed at all in the House?
I'm not sure where that sunset date came from.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it was discussed. It was debated and decided that this would provide adequate extension time, and that in 2009 it could be reexamined and extended again if it continued to prove to be a worthwhile program.
I guess on the one hand, I understand the, or I have a desire perhaps to remove it, but on the other hand, perhaps this create some degree of certainty or reliance for those who want to make this kind of investment, thinking perhaps we won't mess with it until 2009, positively or negatively.
Mm-hmm.
And that, although we could, that's the only reason I asked the question.
Sorry, Byron, just a comment. I just wanted to, for the committee's information, I want you to know that Anne and the agency she works for, St. Vincent de Paul, is doing one of the most incredible jobs of meeting the low-income needs in the Wayne County area, and I know they're extending out beyond that. The projects they've done in my hometown of Springfield, as well as in Eugene, are just really marvelous examples of what a nonprofit can do, and they're given the tools and working partnership of the other side of the private industry as well as the public. And I know it's made a big difference for a lot of people's lives who are homeless before.
Thank you, Senator Byers.
Other questions? Gary, do you want to say anything, or do you want to pass notes?
Jerry D. Roy. What I was going to comment on is I raised the issue in Agency Performance and Operations Committee on the term limits. And that's the term limits. And the discussion was going along, and we were considering it, and something happened. I don't recall what it was, and it just fell off the table, and it really never came to a conclusion. And then when it went into revenue, it just took the bill the way it was and moved it on. So, you know, if you decide to pull out the sunset, nobody's going to have heartburn. On the other hand, you may want to leave it. And the only comment I was going to make is the revenue committee on the council.
Just one reason for perhaps not amending this bill is the lateness of the hour. And we won't have to have a concurrence motion or that kind of thing, although I'm sure they're, well, I hope they would concur, but we'll just leave it as it is. So if that has your support, good.
Thank you so much.
I'll come back in 10 years.
Thank you. That would be a little different group up here. All right. Lynn McNamara.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Lynn McNamara from the League of Oregon Cities. The League is in support of House Bill 2090 precisely because it is a local option, property tax exemption. As the previous speakers have indicated, low-income housing is a community problem. It needs to be solved, and cities need to be involved in that solution. This is a tool. It's a tool that works. It's a tool that can be tailored to a local level, and we support keeping it in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would wish to testify on House Bill 2090? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2090. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2090. Recognize the
Mr. Chair.
Recognize Senator Beyer.
I would move House Bill 2090 to the floor with a discussion.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2090 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Beyer.
Aye.
Senator Hartman. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilde.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Votes aye. House Bill 2090 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2090.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. All right, we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1264. Something I said, Elizabeth? Oh, Mr. Waters. Well, while we're waiting for Mr. Waters, Mr. Graney is here, and he knows all the details about this, so if he wants to come forward and explain it to us. Is it?
Yeah, I like this.
This is a good deal.
It is.
Hopefully that's all we're scheduling these days.
As long as they give money back, that's all I care.
No more of those show hearings. Welcome.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For record, I'm Mike Graney. I'm Assistant Director of the Office of Energy. We support Senate Bill 1264. I'm giving a handout there that goes into some detail, including a section by section of what the bill does. Also a letter from the Department of Economic Development that also supports the bill. But let me mention just a few things briefly, and then I'd be happy to go into more detail if you'd like. This bill came from the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, where it passed unanimously as an attempt to provide greater encouragement of renewable energy, especially energy from forest and farm waste and geothermal energy. And what we've done is taken bits and pieces of three of our existing programs, our business energy tax credit program, our small-scale energy loan program, and our process for siting energy facilities, and made some changes in each of those that combined, I think, will make a more effective package for encouraging, especially farm and forest waste that can be used for energy, either for electric generation or ethanol production or similar types of products. Very briefly, the changes in our siting council process, we have a citizens panel, a seven-person citizens panel of the Energy Facility Siting Council that actually makes decisions on siting large energy facilities, and we staff that council. This bill clarifies the threshold for small facilities that produce ethanol that are below the threshold of the siting council, and it makes it the equivalent of what the threshold is for electric generation, which currently is 25 megawatts. It takes about 6 billion BTUs of, if you made a conversion, to produce that many megawatts. And that's the reason for the change from 2 billion BTU to 6 billion. So it exempts the small facilities, and there is some interest in one in Eastern Oregon in going ahead with that. There's also a provision that changes for larger ethanol facilities, provides them the same type of exemption process that large facilities that are at existing industrial sites can go to our siting council and ask for a ruling on. And that does require an affirmative ruling from the council, but it's a much shorter process than going through the normal siting process. And if the facility meets certain standards to minimize environmental impact, and as an existing industrial facility, current law allows electric generation stations to receive a siting council ruling of an exemption. And this provides the same type of process for an ethanol production facility, which we simply had not anticipated that in the law. And we may have such a facility by PGE in the near future at one of their existing sites. So I think it would be a good facility and a good site for that. Then the bill also makes some technical changes in our small-scale energy loan program to make it easier to make loans for renewable energy. And finally, it makes some changes to our business energy tax credit program that, again, will give us more flexibility. For example, it changes the annual overall program cap to a per-project cap. It continues the program. Also allows a five-year carry forward beyond what current law provides in the event the developer does not have tax liability, and in some cases at the start of these facilities they don't for a few years because they're not making much revenue. In addition, there is an amendment that does two things. It clarifies that a person, an applicant, would not need to request a contested case if they want to appeal a ruling. And secondly, it makes the effective date of the tax credit provisions, and that was for a tax credit, tax credit provisions would be effective for the applications that we received in 1999. And again, that would give us flexibility for projects that come in this year. That's a very brief summary. We support both the bill and the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I thank you. Are there questions? Yes, Senator Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, we've already been through this in the Ag Committee, but let's go about it again. The revenue impact is actually rather small. Projected for 2001-2003 is $1.194 million. And so I find it curious we lower the amount from, or we change the amount from $40 million cap to $10 million per project.
And quite obviously, by the revenue impact, we aren't coming close to that. Do we anticipate down the road having projects that would use a substantial amount of, or take a substantial amount of revenue away?
Chairman Senator Wild, potentially it could. I think more importantly, the immediate benefit is currently because of that overall cap, we have had to limit by rule each individual project to no more than $2 million. We actually set by rule allocations by service territory too, by utility service territory, because they market the program for us to their customers. This, by changing the cap to a per project cap, one, it assures that there's not a disproportionate use by one company, but also would allow us to eliminate these lower subcaps that I think have discouraged these types of renewable energy projects that are capital intensive.
Mike, just to clarify, you might want to explain what the relationship between the cap and the credit amount is. The cap applies to the cost.
The business tax credit currently we can certify projects of $40 million a year. And the tax credit then is 35% of the cost of the allowable project taken over 5 years. So it's 10%, 10%, and then 5, 5, 5. And with the carry forward and with some drop off in between time people apply and they go ahead with their project, the annual revenue impact is, I guess that's what we're looking at, about $3 million a year. Is that right? Something like that, I think. The other thing about the business tax credit is allowable costs are only the things that the incremental costs of the energy measure themselves. It has to be something that's beyond code or beyond standard practice. So it's a truly incremental investment that's more than likely would not have occurred otherwise without the tax credit.
Other questions?
My current is what, 3?
Anyone? Do you have a question on this one?
I actually directed to Mr. Waters. First of my
Senator Wild, currently according to the tax expenditure report, the cost of the Business Energy Facility Tax Credit Program is about a little over $3 million per year, or projected $6.4 million in the 9901 biennium.
Thank you.
So, let me ask on that, some years on the revenue impact statement we have, these numbers are in addition to the estimates of in the tax expenditure report?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. These would be the incremental costs, additional costs of making changes to the tax credit program.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Your testimony?
Thank you.
Ken Evans. We have Greg Castle come up also, if you would, please. And Ken Armstrong. Looks like you all like it. Oh, Mayor Byron needs to leave, so.
Well, we'll miss.
So we'll hear your testimony. Hopefully he can hear all of it. Please proceed.
Chair of members of the committee, my name is Ken Evans, representing Sustainable Energy Development Company. Company has a cogeneration facility down in Medford called Biomass One. We brought this bill forward because my client has been dealing with the Office of the Department of Energy on a national level and with the ethanol programs that have been springing up across the nation and the potential benefits to this state and with not only the waste stream that's available here, but also the potential market that's opening up in other parts of the country and the benefits of ethanol as dealing with the air quality issues and things like that. We appreciate the opportunity. I want to be brief. Mike said very eloquently, as usual, most of the good points and discuss those. So we'd hope that this committee would pass this bill on and could answer any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Satchel. I'm a program analyst for PGE. I'm sitting in for Cindy Nelson, who's PGE's legislative lobbyist, and apologize for being unexpectedly detained. PGE supports Senate Bill 1264. This bill represents good public policy, simplifies government process, encourages both public and private sectors to utilize programs to develop and expand production of renewable resources. Natural resources have always been important to our economy. The expansion and development of renewable resources, especially from agriculture and forest waste, known as biomass, allows us to continue our heritage of full utilization of natural resources. SB 1264 will promote the development of this relatively new industry that can be located in rural areas of the state and provide new jobs and help to revitalize lagging rural economies. PGE, the Port of St. Helens, and others are working with a company that is interested in moving to site a biomass facility in Columbia County. The ranking siting certificate process through the siting council could cause the project to go elsewhere. Current law allows the siting council to exempt from the siting process electrical generating facilities, which are located in existing industrial sites and which meet other criteria to reduce environmental impact. SB 1264 provides the siting council with the same ability for biomass ethanol facilities, which meet similar criteria. You know how important it is to be able to respond to clients in a timely fashion. We feel that changes to current law contained in SB 1264 address the needs of businesses, encourage use of the small-scale energy loan program, and make changes to the business energy tax credit, all with the intent of encouraging the development and use of renewable resources. Again, PGE supports 1264, and we thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Sessions. Mr. Armstrong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong, Executive Director of the Oregon Public Courts Association. I'm pinching a little bit this afternoon for the courts of St. Helens and also the Port of Morrow. Greg's already talked to you a little bit about the St. Helens project. And Department of Energy referenced the Port of Morrow project. I just want to indicate that the Ports Association is fully supportive of this bill. It does allow the siting of biomass fuel facilities without some delays that could truly jeopardize the project, particularly in Columbia County. Long storm record with support and appreciate the committee's attention.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? Thank you all. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 1264? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1264. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1264. We have the dash twos.
Yes. Unfortunately, Mr. Chair,
the hand and gross dash twos.
That's right. It would need to be a dash a something.
Yes. Yeah. Two. Is this the only change? Are you saying that by terms of having reference to them as dash A2 as opposed to,
does it have to go through legislative
council? I have a feeling we can try this one.
I'm sure legislative council would prefer that they go through legislative council, but it's really up to.
Let's give it a
shot. Let's do it.
Let's just rise
the wild side. Really simple.
Roll them. Okay. I will move the.
I like that. Roll them.
Senator Wild moves the.
Dash two amendments to 1264A. How do you like that?
Well, the amendments that have been presented to all the members that are hand engrossed that indicate the changes on the lines. I've inserted some numbers, and importantly, in line six of the proposed amendment, referring to line N of the bill, deleting 2000 and inserting 1999. In both places. Is that your amendment, Senator Wall?
It sounds close to it, yes, sir.
All right. Is the amendments before us? Is there discussion? Your opposition? If not, the amendment is agreed to. Is there further discussion of the bill? Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 1264 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That sounds just right. Thank you, Senator. Is there discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Harrison, Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Beyer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wild.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Votes aye. Senate Bill 1264 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1264 while we are thanking Senator Wild for carrying this bill. And let me.
Well, Senator Starr was pretty, I told
him. Gary Starr was here. However, he looked really excited.
No, he's into this kind of thing.
I am too.
He's the definition of renewable
resource and energy-wise. Just plug him in all night and he shows up every morning. He's great. Let me just advise the committee that tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, the revenue forecast will be before the House Revenue Committee. For those members who would like to sit in and participate, I'm sure that with notice, a spot can be found for you. So I just advise you that, and it'll be presented again to the Ways and Means Committee approximately 8:45, I think. They welcome us.
Whoa.
To have this kind of operation.
Finally, we get that
operation this close to the end of the session, isn't it great?
Next week, we can put the budget together and go home.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, that's pretty good for a while.
Yeah. All right, is there anything else coming for the committee? If not, we are adjourned.
Dr. Starr told me he has roosters.